them to it. Tin men and the bright lights will blind your moon, oh baby. The needle, if your love is strong, take on what you feel, baby.
This is the 91.3 FM Business Billboard. Regina Community Radio is delighted with the support of the following businesses.
Queen City Stone can modernize or upgrade your home with stone or tile. Stone, it's so durable and beautiful. Queen City Stone will install porcelain, mosaic, and glass tile. Nothing but top-of-the-line products. Professional, courteous, a family business. Get in touch with Queen City Stone at 533-5243.
Planning to move? Use expressaddress.com. Now it's easier than ever to notify Sask Energy and 10 other organizations that you are moving. Express Address can help you connect, transfer, or disconnect residential services and update your mailing address information online in one easy step. It's simple to use and it's available at any time of the day or night. Make your move easier. Visit expressaddress.com.
This has been the Business Billboard. Thank you for supporting Regina Community Radio.
Active people have an active pass. The City of Regina Leisure Pass gives you access to our city's 3 leisure centers and dozens of sports and recreation sites. This pass is for everyone. So get moving, stay healthy, and learn something new.
I need a gym where I can train.
I want to try Zumba.
I swim every day. It keeps me young.
Get your leisure pass at all city leisure centers. To find out more, call 777-7000 or visit regina.ca.
Hello, this is David Robert Loblaw, owner of Chocolates by Bernard Kelleavo in Regina's Cathedral Village. I am proud to introduce our 12 new chocolates, just in time for Valentine's Day. They're in a box called 12 Reasons I Love You. 12 new tastes of the finest chocolate in town, all with natural ingredients, no preservatives, no chemicals. Take a look at them on our website, chocolateregina.com.
91.3 FM CJTR, Regina Community Radio. Our programming is made possible by community-minded businesses like the Fainting Goat Restaurant and by listeners like you.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily shared by Radius Communications Incorporated, operators of 91.3 FM CJTR.
Dignity,
security, freedom,
respect,
justice,
equality,
equality,
remedy, and protection,
fairness,
fair trial,
freedom,
right,
work,
peace,
losers,
men.
This is my mistake, and I didn't make it good. I raised the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum,
identity,
family,
home,
conscience,
expression,
expression. Expression,
expression,
participation,
democracy,
welfare,
work,
leisure,
leisure,
health,
education,
progress,
culture,
human rights,
Charter Dana,
solidarity,
responsibility.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good day to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. Written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and this week I'm flying solo again. Mona is still feeling a little under the weather, but she's making progress, and I hope to have her back on the show soon. I'd like to welcome Rob Sutherland and Bernie Cohen, and they're here to help us understand the complexities and consequences of Bill C-11, the Copyright Modernization Act currently working its way through Parliament, that will appear to, on one hand, legalize some practices, yet on the other hand, take away those rights through criminalization. This sounds kind of confusing, Rob. What's going on?
Well, Bill C-11 has got a number of provisions that legalize things which have been in a kind of a gray area, such as format shifting or ripping CDs, that kind of thing. But it also has a thing called the digital lock provision, which states that if the maker of a CD decides that they're going to put copy protection software on it, you cannot break or circumvent that software legally. And so basically all the rights that are given to you under that law can be taken away if there is a digital lock program on whatever piece of media you're buying. So essentially it's a real bait and switch. you have these rights on paper, but the only thing that will allow you to do it is if the company distributing the material decides to not put a digital lock on it.
Well, digital locks are not new.
No, they're not new, and in fact, they've almost become useless over the years because of various circumvention measures that have been developed and spread out among the communities. But this is a different thing. In fact, they really don't care if the software is technically worthless in terms of protecting it. Because it's now illegal, they can turn around and charge someone for making the effort to remove it. So I think you're probably going to see most commercial music being distributed with that if this law should pass.
Okay, this I'm just trying to think here. Like, how does this affect, say, the average music lover, somebody who habitually just goes and buys? I guess it doesn't affect somebody who just goes and buys the music, but the average person doesn't do that. If you're computer literate at all, you're downloading music. And that, in its heyday with Napster, people did it. It's kind of calmed down now, hasn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's become part of the culture. A lot of people download music. And in fact, because of the media levy, that the tax that you pay on every purchase of a CD or something like that, there is, you know, a legal way to share files. And in fact, that's another interesting point, is that they want the people that are behind this this particular act are on the one hand saying, well, we're going to put this protection on there to prevent you from copying, right, but we still want the money that's going to be charged on the sale of every CD. So this is the kind of thing that would affect anybody who wants to take a CD and rip it, put it on an MP3 player, that kind of thing. But actually, the impact goes far beyond music sales. For example, if you were a teacher and you wanted to put together a presentation that involved some short media clips from a collection, you would be allowed to do that under the fair use provisions of Bill C-11, but you would be prevented from doing that if it had a digital lock on it. So, in fact, it really, you know, these rights become really meaningless, and it really would have a major effect on far more than people downloading music illegally and that kind of thing.
Let's back up here a little, Rob. I think I should have done this in the first place, but I'd like to know what your background is relative to what we're talking about here, and Bernie's background. I'd like Bernie to explain what. Maybe I will start off with you because we haven't heard from you yet.
Okay, yeah, I'm a former instructor in the social sciences, anthropology, and sociology at the University of Regina. I went to graduate school at the University of Arizona, and after I left there and started my duties as a house husband for many years, teaching part-time, I got interested in computers and computer technology, and started off with MS-DOS and went through the Windows 3.1 and Windows 98, and then switched to Linux, or open source software, and that's been my interest since. And I'm interested in the impact of technology on society, and particularly with respect to the mass media, and I've been doing that. I taught a course in that way back in the day, and something I continue to follow.
Rob, what's your background then?
Well, I'm a computer programmer. I've been doing that since the long ago days when I was in my 20s. Right now I'm a freelancer here in Regina. I'm also a founding member of the Pirate Party of Canada, which is one of the reasons why I'm interested in these issues of internet freedom and copyright reform. Basically, I've been a member of the free software community, the using Linux and all the other various pieces of software. I think, you know, those ideas of freedom, being able to control what you buy instead of just getting a black box handed to you with one hand and the money taken out of your wallet with the other, is a good thing. And I think we basically need to be aware of what the impact is of a lot of these kinds of laws, like Bill C-11 and the anti-counterfeiting trade agreement.
Okay. When you were talking about digital locks, we've been down this road before. It started in the 90s with something called TRIPS, which is trade-related intellectual property something, I can't remember, but and this morphed into an agreement called WIPO, an organization called WIPO, the World
Intellectual
Property Organization, yeah. And set up a whole bunch of rules, and the culmination of a lot of this was in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act in the U.S., which had really broad-reaching implications, but it's been very difficult in a way to enforce, because on these locks or copy protection has been around for quite a while. And there was a Swedish kid in the 90s who broke the code for the DVD. Up to that time, movie DVDs were protected by this little bit of encryption. Mm-hmm. And the 16-year-old kid found it trivially simple to break that lock. And there are lots of DVD players, a lot of the DVD players that are supplied with Linux open source software, but are also available for Windows, use that code. And technically, they're in violation of the law, but who's enforcing it? I mean, the enforcement of these rules become a real nightmare. And, it's a question of, you can pass a law, but how is it enforced, and what are the consequences of enforcement?
I guess it boils down to somebody creates something. We're talking about intellectual property, whether it's music or whether it's a program, a movie or whatever. Somebody creates intellectual property. How do they... They're entitled to compensation. And how do we ensure that they're properly compensated, you know, if it's a particularly popular piece of intellectual property, be it a song, be it a movie?
Oh, certainly. You know, the artist, the creator, the industry that manufactures and distributes the media are certainly entitled to make a fair profit and to make a living at it. And nobody is really arguing that. Mm-hmm. Well, people are arguing it, but, I mean, that's not my point of view. And but I think that the fact that these laws are being written strictly in the interests of the recording industry, of the manufacturers, means that they go too far in one direction. For example, a lot of, with Bill C-11, you don't really have any legal process involved in claiming that you're infringing on copyright. It's you can issue similar to the DMCA Act in the States, you could issue a report, allege that somebody is violating copyright, and force them to remove it. Some of the other things that are getting put into it would allow you to shut down websites and that kind of thing, block them, based on an allegation. So I think the thing is that we need to have a little bit of balance. We need to have the rights of consumers, you know, to enjoy the products they bought without worrying about having them seized or being charged. And we need some more public input into the process.
So as this applies to Canada, we're talking about Bill C-11.
Right.
And that's the Copyright Modernization Act. And is it basically trying to apply ACTA to Canadian law? What's going on there?
Not exactly. ACTA is kind of a parallel thing. It's a multilateral trade agreement that would would result in much stricter enforcement of copyright infringement penalties and that kind of thing. But the Bill C-11 is a set of policies that originated in the U.S. amongst the the recording industry lobby and that kind of thing, has been heavily pushed on the Canadian government. When the WikiLeaks cables were released, there were a whole bunch of them showing that, you know, the Canadian government was getting pressured, was in fact taking these proposals almost verbatim from the U.S., the recording industry lobby there, and trying to put them into law. So, and you know, it's important to remember that the copyright issues don't stop at music. Okay, almost everything we use is copyright, and this will affect a lot more than simply stopping a bunch of bad hats from, you know, ripping off Hollywood. So,
yeah. I think counterfeiting is part of the problem that they're supposedly trying to identify as well, like where something is.
Well, with SOPA in the U.S., the Stop Online Piracy, and the PIPA, which is the Anti-Piracy Act, they conflate downloading a CD or a movie with producing a counterfeit drug, mm-hmm. and seem to want to assess the same sort of penalty. So I download a song,
right.
Is the same as a phony piece of penicillin that somebody takes, which either has no effect or a harmful effect.
Mm-hmm.
And that's strange.
Yeah.
I think the whole idea, absurd idea of these statutory damages that have been assessed against people, what was it, $2 million
for
24 songs in the States, is just way beyond any kind of reality. I think the problem here, or at least part of the root of the problem, is that when we've moved into the digital age, property, the nature of property has changed. Used to be property, used to be material objects. Mm. And if I stole something from you, you wouldn't have it anymore. But if I copied it, I'd have a copy and you'd have a copy. And they're trying to move that kind of property law into immaterial things, or things that have less materiality, like a bunch of electrons flowing over a wire, and that's causing all kinds of difficulties. And it's also interfering with the business model of certain corporations, particularly the big media companies, Hollywood, I suppose Nashville through the RIAA, and they're trying to protect their old way of doing business. I can give you a small example. Now, suppose Kodak is interesting, because Kodak actually developed the digital camera and digital technology, but they were so afraid of what they'd done that once it got loose in the world, they became laggards because it interfered with their old way of making money, which is selling film.
Mm-hmm.
Now, suppose they could convince the Congress and the legislatures of the world to ban digital pictures,
right,
so that their model of selling film was still viable, and you have some idea of what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
here. You know, these people essentially want to wreck the internet, I suppose is the best way to put it, or at least torque it around or limit it so that their way of making money is preserved, at the expense of other companies, particularly I'm thinking Google, which is making money, and Facebook, which are making money from the net through probably advertising and data mining,
mm-hmm.
and all these other ways they have of churning cash. In fact, in terms of GDP, they're much bigger now than Hollywood or or Nashville.
Wouldn't these big guys be, like you talk about Google and Facebook, this wouldn't be helpful to them, would it?
Oh, certainly not. I mean, there would be a huge chill on all kinds of things, like uploading videos to YouTube. People make videos and very naively include very sometimes copyrighted material in what they're uploading. Mm. And these may be liable for takedown at the whim of some company who thinks their IP has been infringed.
So in ignorance in that case, because, of course, according to present copyright legislation, that's public performance.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously public performance. So
I can give you a curious example of of funny chill. This is the song "Happy Birthday to You,"
right,
has been copywritten under copyright since the 1890s, and it can be traced back before that. And the copyright, I guess, is not due to expire until 2030.
Okay.
And this is why at a chain restaurant, if you go to a chain restaurant,
right,
and the waiters all gather around,
yep,
and sing to you, they
right
can't sing "Happy Birthday" to you. If it's
right
your birthday, they have
right
to sing something else.
Right.
Because they would be infringing on the...
That's interesting. I didn't realize that that kind of copyright went so long. I thought 50 years was the usual.
Oh, not these days.
No, it's that's one of the most destructive things about, you know, this copyright battle, is that it keeps getting extended, and basically our public culture gets eroded, because the idea of copyright was to give the creator of something a sufficient income during their lifetime,
right,
to, you know, so that they could realize a profit on their work and make a living and get their fair return for their work. But what's happened now is that the media companies have basically become copyright monopolists. The first thing that happens when you sign up with one of them is that you sign away your copyright to it. So it's not really the individual artist who is getting money from these things. It's the media companies who are then passing along what they want to the artists. And, you know, copyright was never intended to provide a cash cow until the end of time, but that's what it's turned into. And the copyright terms have been extended and extended to the point where we're losing big chunks of our common culture, and I think that's just unconscionable to see the public domain get eroded like that.
Well, see, Bill C-11 is not law yet. It's working its way through Parliament. I understand that there's a protest being arranged, for tomorrow, is it?
Right. Yeah, there's a protest December 11th, Saturday. It'll be by the Buffalo in the Scar Street Mall. And it's going to kind of have two foci, I don't know. One is that we want to show our support of the International Day of Action Against ACTA in Europe, where they're expecting to have over 1 million people out on the streets protesting ACTA. Europe is really on fire with this. There are hundreds and hundreds of protests planned all across the continent, and a huge amount of pressure on the governments. Germany just announced, for example, that they will not sign ACTA. Poland has refused to sign. A number of other countries have done so as well. So it is having an effect. And if Europe does refuse to take part, that's pretty much going to stop ACTA. So that's a pretty good example of how public activism can make a difference. And mm-hmm. if they can win there, maybe we can win here.
So ACTA is something that would affect us as well as Bill C-11?
Absolutely. ACTA is a multilateral trade agreement which was negotiated in secret between a very small group of wealthy nations starting in, I think, 2007. It was done in secret, and in fact, without the efforts of WikiLeaks and the Pirate Bay, we might never have known what was going on until it was actually in place.
Well, we're going to have to take a break here now, but we're going to carry on talking about ACTA and the protest and how all that's going to hopefully come to a positive conclusion for us. But we'll be right back, and we're going to play some pirate-type music after the break.
Well, I used to be a farmer and I made a living fine. I had a little stretch of land along the seaby line. But times went by and though I tried, the money wasn't there. And the bankers came and took my land and told me fair is fair. I looked for every kind of job, the answer always no. Hire you now, they'd always laugh, we just let 20 go. The government, they promised me a measly little sum. But I got too much pride to end up just another bum. Then I thought, who gives a damn if all the jobs are gone? I'm gonna be a pirate on the River Saskatchewan. And it's a heave ho, high ho, coming down the plains, stealing weeds and barley and all the other grains. And it's a ho, hey, high ho, farmers by your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. Well, you think the local farmers would know that I'm at large. But just the other day, I found an unprotected barge. I stuck up right behind them, and they were none the wiser. I rammed the ship and sank it, and I sold the fertilizer. Bridges, dynamos, just spans a mighty river. Farmers rust in so much fear, their stomachs are a quiver. Cause they know the captain tractor's hiding in the bay. I'll jump the bridge and knock them cold and sail up with the hay. And it's a heave, ho, high, ho, coming down the plains, stealing wheat and barley and all the other grains. And it's a ho, hey, high, hey, farmers fire your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. Well, Mounty Bobby chased me, he was always at my throat. He bought on the shoreline cause he didn't own a boat. But the cutbacks were coming and the Mountie lost his job. So now he's sailing with me and we call him Saucy Bob. A swinging sword and skull and bones and pleasant company. I never pay my income tax and screw the GST. Sailing down to Saskatoon, the terror of the sea. If you wanna reach the co-op, boy, you gotta get by me. Ha-ha! It's a heave, oh, high, oh, coming down the plains, stealing wheat and barley and all the other grains. And it's a ho, hey, high, hey, farmers by your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. Well, the pirate life's appealing, but you don't just find it here. I hear in North Alberta there's a band of buccaneers. They roam the Athabasca from Smith to Fort McKay. And you're gonna lose your sense if you have to pass away. Well, winter is a-coming and a chill is in the breeze. My pirate days are over once the river starts to freeze. But I'll be back in springtime and now I have to go. I hear there's lots of plundering down in New Mexico. And it's a heave, ho, high, ho, coming down the plains, stealing wheat and barley and all the other grains. And it's a ho, hey, high, hey, farmers by your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. And it's a heave, ho, high, ho, coming down the plains, stealing wheat and barley and all the other grains. And it's a ho, hey, high, hey, farmers by your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. And barley and all the other grains. And it's a ho, hey, high, hey, farmers by your doors when you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. When you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores. When you see the Jolly Roger on Regina's mighty shores.
Yeah. That's the Arrogant Worms. Great song. Pirating, we were talking about the protest that you folks are organizing for tomorrow.
Right, yeah. Well, once again, it's going to start at 12 noon down by the Buffalo at the Cigar Street Mall. So come on out.
Oh, got to correct you there. That's the F.W. Hill Mall.
Oh, pardon me. My age is showing. yeah, that's right. The mall in front of the Cornwall Center, okay, just at the Victoria Park end.
Okay.
So show up at noon and, you know, bring some drums, bring yourself,
make
bring
some
your
noise.
Kids, right? Make some noise. We're working on some good chants, and we will be passing out some pamphlets and having some speakers. So that was your chance to come out and show how much you disagree with Bill C-11 and support the folks in Europe who have managed to hopefully stop ACTA.
I'm just going to take a moment to introduce ourselves again. I'm Jim Hutchings, and we're here without Mona, and I've got Rob Sutherland here with me, and also Bernie Cohen from U of R. And we were just talking about the...
Formerly.
Pardon me?
Formerly.
Formerly of U of R.
Formerly from.
From U of R, okay. And he's very interested in computer software, and he's a Linux guy, and he's given up on Microsoft altogether.
Since 2003.
We were talking, though, about copyright being an issue since basically, I don't know, since there's been intellectual property, I suppose, you could really say.
Oh, sure. I mean... Ever since the invention of printing, it's been a huge thing. There was actually a case, I believe, in the 1880s where there was a sheet music copy operation going on in Montreal. It was raising a lot of ire down in Washington, and they went after that. So, in a way, it's kind of a great Canadian tradition. So, yeah, these issues have been going on for a long time, and I think, you know, as I said, you know, we want to respect the rights of creators. We want to see them making a living. I got nothing but the greatest respect for our artists and creators and that kind of thing, but we can't let, you know, the framework, the roadmap to our future in terms of what we can and can't have, what we can and can't look at, what we can and can't share with each other, dictated to us by a very small special interest group.
I was just thinking that it's kind of ironic that really, I mean, it sounds like copyright is protecting the little guy here, but it's really not. Because what's happened is, like, let's take music for an example. Somebody writes a piece of music or performs or does something, and then usually they need a few bucks, so they sell it to the company that they're working for, a music publishing company or a record manufacturing company or something like that. They sell their rights to it, so they get a few bucks, but then it's the big company that gets the millions.
Exactly. There was a recent case where the, I believe, well, I don't want to name the company, but apparently artists had not been getting paid royalties for songs re-released on compilations and that kind of thing.
Right.
They won a case and were given something like $6 billion in damages.
Wow.
Yeah, I think last year. So, which would make the, you know, the recording industry the biggest pirates of all.
It's kind of ironic, isn't it?
Yeah.
If I could just interject
here,
there's a whole... The idea of intellectual property, you know, there's a guy in the States, software developer called Richard Stallman, who's one of the founders of the free software movement, and he objects strongly to the use of the term intellectual property because it lumps a whole bunch of unrelated or semi-related pieces of law and ways of doing things into one big basket. And there's patents, there's trademarks, and there's copyright, and there's probably a few other things I can't think of off the top of my head. And they each have separate histories and separate rules and laws that have been developed over the years to settle disputes. And the thing that I find onerous about copyright, now when it comes to patents, as we were talking amongst ourselves before, that if someone violates your patent, you have to sue them civilly to recover damages. Mm-hmm. This is not a matter for government. But somehow the recording industry and the motion picture industry are trying to leverage the power of the state, the power of government and its police powers to go after people. And I think that's something really quite egregious. This is not, as you were saying, this is not protecting the little guy mm-hmm. from the big guy. This is right. protecting the big guy from the little folk who right. just want to listen to music or share a song with a friend or time shift movies.
Mm-hmm. I suppose that would you're mm-hmm. copying something. So strictly speaking, that would violate that or the way that they're, I guess they're proposing things.
Right. If there was a digital lock on what you wanted to time shift, then you wouldn't be able to do it legally.
Wow.
Yeah. And yeah, there are a lot of implications to this that people need to think about, especially when it comes to the amendments to Bill C-11 that are getting pushed for right now by the recording industry lobbyists. They're asking for the implementation of something called the three strikes rule, which basically says that an ISP must terminate your account and blacklist you if you are caught repeating copyright infringement. And, you know, that is a really bad thing. You know, cutting off access to the net because of alleged copyright violations, and this isn't something that they have to prove in court. They would just make the report. The ISP would have to terminate your account, and there you are. Even if it turns out that you're somebody who never uses the internet but has a teenager in the basement.
Well, let's be clear about something too. This ACTA thing that they're talking about is not actually law.
No, it's an international trade agreement, which would force people subscribing to it to enact laws based on, you know, in order to punish copyright infringement and mm-hmm. do that kind of thing. ACTA has been signed by Canada. It would require some legislative changes to bring us into compliance with it, and they have not been done yet. Mm-hmm. And the thing about ACTA is it really is a club to beat poorer nations into complying with U.S. copyright law so that, for example, generic drugs would become, well, much harder to manufacture than you would need to go out and buy licenses, mm-hmm. Which would, you know, increase the cost way past the, you know, the point that poorer countries could afford. So ACTA is, you know, is a very bad thing because of its secrecy, because of the implications of it, and because it is simply written with the best interests of big corporations in mind.
The interesting thing about ACTA is the aim of it is to really, as someone I read put it, to raise the bar, to tighten restrictions that are already exist through earlier laws like the DMCA in the States and WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, they had provisions for something called safe haven. Like if a YouTube hosted a video that violated some copyright, mm-hmm. YouTube would be, they would receive a takedown notice, they'd take it down, and that would be the end of it. But if they, under ACTA, if they were labeled willful infringers, they could be just shut right down. Mm-hmm. Shut the whole thing right down. And it would be you're guilty until you can prove yourself innocent or buy your way out of it. There'd be none of this safe haven business. And the recent case, even without ACTA or SOPA, has been the Mega Upload case, in which a whole file storage and sharing network was taken down on alleged copyright infringement. In fact, the owner, who's got a bit of a dodgy history himself and is kind of a poster child for people we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
His private home in New Zealand estate was raided by a SWAT team. The New Zealand police, acting on orders or in concert with officials in the United States. And it's had a lot of fallout. There was a case in Regina of a software developer who stored a lot of his valuable code on Mega Upload, and it's gone, and he can't get it back, and he didn't have a local backup, so he's hooped.
Yeah.
And he may never get it back because it's all being held as evidence.
So there's a huge disadvantage of the cloud.
Yeah, that's and this would threaten all kinds of cloud and cloud-like services, which are an important and growing part of the Internet.
That's right. One of the effects that the DMCA has had in the U.S. is to force people who don't want to risk that kind of takedown into setting up business in Canada, buying servers and that kind of thing. Now, and I'm not referring to gray market or black market kind of people. I'm talking about people who have data that they do not want or cannot risk or aren't even contractually or legally allowed to risk, needing to make sure that data is going to be safe and secure. Now, with this whole suspension of legal process that's going on with C11 and that kind of thing, those people are not going to be able to safely store their data in Canada. They're going to have to find other places. So it has a big chilling effect and is going to severely impact a lot of our Internet infrastructure here, a lot of our companies that do hosting and that kind of thing.
And it also affects the security industry in a funny way because a lot of security software uses or is based on some form of encryption. And some of the software is developed to test how strong encryption or security is. And if this software can be used to reverse engineer digital locks, you know, even though it's not, that may not be its original intention, it could be rendered illegal, and then it will actually have the effect of making the Internet less secure than it otherwise might be.
Yeah, and there's any number of really bad. And for example, back in 2005, Sony BMG released a number of music CDs that contained what's called a rootkit, which is a piece of software that facilitates access to your system by an outside party. It's the kind of thing that's widely used by the people that distribute malware. The first thing they do is install a rootkit on your computer, and then they can access it over the net and do whatever they want with it, turn it into a spam generator or that kind of thing. Sony put that software on these CDs, and people had this rootkit installed, and then it was discovered by a security researcher, and you know they got hauled through the mill and everything like that. But the interesting thing is that if you have a digital lock on a piece of media, you can't go in there and investigate just what that digital locking program is doing. Is it actually simply stopping copy protection, or is it going to turn around and install something on your computer that you don't know about and can't even really legally find out about? You know, so it really creates this black box that people are simply going to be asked to trust.
Trust a big corporation.
Right. You know, that's not going to do anything to hurt them or, you know, get on there. And so, you know, those are some of the implications that really aren't being brought up by the recording industry.
And the other thing that kind of occurs to me here is that we're talking about control over these internet service providers, and if you look at situations where say in the Arab Spring and that type of thing, if you didn't have control before, you're sure going to want it now, because the internet has been, I think, a large part of what has transpired in places like Libya and Tunisia and Syria.
Yeah, absolutely. I read an interview with a Libyan engineer who basically constructed a network after Gaddafi shut down the regular internet infrastructure there,
right.
And he said that yes, that is an absolute necessity for a free population in this day and age to have communications that don't go through bottlenecks and can't be controlled, and that any sort of totalitarian regime, which I'm afraid we are edging ever closer to, is going to be terrified of that. They always have been.
There's an interesting quote. From a Cory Doctorow, who gave a talk on the attack on what he called general purpose computing, that is the free use of computer technology. And he quoted or paraphrased a official from the RIAA who was testifying over SOPA in Washington. And the official is quoted as saying...
What's SOPA again here? Sorry.
SOPA is the Stop Online Piracy Act. And this person said, well, this software technologies that we're proposing, something like that has been used in China, Iran, and Turkmenistan and shown to be work, you know, so... The question is, of course, is that the kind of society we want to have, and is that the kind of internet we want to have?
Yeah, well, that's right, and a lot of those sort of remarks are very revealing about how these people actually think about freedom. And I guess one of the points that I keep trying to make is that this is not just about enabling people to get free music and movies. There are very large real-world impacts on people that can't afford to pay for the licenses. People in countries that are, you know, dying because they can't afford the drugs, and who can't rebuild their industrial plant because they can't afford to pay. To pay the cost. So it has an effect on human rights, on human dignity, and human life. And
Well, we've just got about 4.5 minutes here left. I'm just wondering if you could sort of outline what the average guy can do here. I mean, I know you're going to have a protest tomorrow, but what other sort of things can the average guy do to get involved with trying to make sure this doesn't happen?
The first thing that anyone can do is to educate themselves on what's going on with this stuff, because the biggest problem, the reason that we're looking at this version of C11 that's so close to going into law, mm-hmm. is because nobody really realized what was going on. Same with ACTA. You know, these are complex conceptual things that don't really have real-world equivalents. You know, you can't point to it and say, well, that's what's going to happen. So first, educate yourself. Second, call your MP. Email them. I mean, let them know that you're not prepared to put up with this and that you're angry about it. And, you know, make sure that it's an issue. If you belong to a political party, raise it. This cuts across all kinds of party lines and that kind of thing. Basically, be active, be aware, and be angry.
And following up on this, you're going to have a brochure that you're going to be handing out tomorrow.
Right.
So if nothing else, people could come down to the F.W. Hill Mall and get this brochure, this pamphlet, and this could be the start of finding out what's going on.
Exactly. Yeah, I've put together, we have a couple of pamphlets, one from the European protests on ACTA, another one on C111, which contains a lot of good info and a big list of websites you can go to and find out what's going on and what you can do about it.
And this C-11 has been through Parliament, I think this is its third kick at the can, and the first two times Parliament was flooded. People let their MPs know what they thought of this bill and that they didn't approve of it, and it's time to just do it again. Mm-hmm. Just let them know what you think.
Do it even more.
And do it even more, because with a majority now, the copyright lobby has been lobbying to have C-11 even strengthened and put some of the provisions that were embodied in SOPA into C-11, and we certainly don't want that.
Well, as we saw with Bill C-10, it didn't matter what anybody said about anything. The bill went through the way they wanted it to. They didn't accept any amendments to speak of, and it just went through. They have a majority, and they just ram it through.
Right.
So we don't want to see the same thing happen with Bill C-11.
No, we don't. But the thing is, this is really this isn't the end of a fight. This is only the beginning. We're going to have to stand up for our rights if we want to keep them, and that's how it's always been, and probably that's how it's always going to be. So, stand up.
Yep. Yeah. Well, you were saying that because of people protesting in Europe, ACTA has basically
it's stalled. Yeah, Germany has refused to sign it. A number of other countries have, and that's completely due to the public outcry against it.
So it does make a difference.
It does make a difference, yeah. Don't ever think it doesn't.
All right. And on that note, I think we'll wrap it up here. Thanks. I'd like to thank Rob Nicholson and... pardon me, Nicholson, where did I get that?
Sutherland.
Oh, snap. And Bernie Cohen, thank you very much for being here today to talk about this and kind of make us aware of what's happening in the Internet. And the Internet, as we know it now, is in danger.
It
is. So we owe it to ourselves here to find out what's going on. Anyway, as we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and learned something new about human rights for all people. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Bennison, founder of Amnesty International, said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."